This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. I am so pleased to be able to have on my program today a woman who I admire so much, not just because she is one of the most delightful women I've ever talked to, but because she has written a fantastic book with her father, one of America's greatest heroes. Christina Olds is the daughter of, I think, certainly, I just thrill every time I say his name, Robin Olds, who is a triple ace, an Air Force legend, and I'm so happy to welcome Christina to the show. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Patsy. It's great to be here.
Well, I get very emotional when I talk about your father.
Well, I don't blame you. So do I.
Well, so tell us first, let's talk a little bit about, well, we'll talk a lot about the book that you wrote with him, and it's just a fantastic book.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, he started trying to write the book about 15 years before he passed away. He would write down memories, vignettes. They would be sometimes 2 pages, sometimes 5 pages, sometimes just a paragraph. And as he remembered things, he would just write them down or type them out and put them away in a box. And he kept revisiting that and doing it all through the years as people were begging him to write his memoirs. And in fact, he had many established authors who came up to him and begged him to let them help him write these memoirs because he seemed like he just wasn't getting around to it. In fact, Tom Clancy came with General Chuck Horner to my dad's house in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and asked him if he could please help him write. And my dad always said, no one's going to put words in my mouth. I will get this done. No one else is going to do it. But I had a really strong feeling through those 15 years when he kept sending me pages to look at that he was never going to get around to it. Because my dad just, he hated to sit still, and he didn't like sitting in front of the computer, which he often cussed at it as he was playing solitaire, and then he'd type a few things. But he wanted to be out in the world with his guys and go to reunions and give speeches at pilot graduations and things like that. So he wasn't getting around to it at all. And when he got sick in October of 2006, yes, that was it, I quit my job and moved in with him. I was his only caregiver for his last 8 months. And it was during that time when he told me he was mad at himself for, you know, not getting the book done, but he just couldn't sit still and everything was a real mess. And I basically told him a week before he died that I would get the book done for him. And I'd always kind of known I'd need to. And we laughed a lot about that. He apologized for leaving me such a mess. And I told him not to worry. And after he passed away, 3 months later, I started pulling everything together. And it literally was loose pieces of paper, nothing, very little titled, very little dated, nothing chronological. And so when you read the book, about 50% of the words in there are my dad's. They're from his notes, from his diaries, from his letters, from the articles he'd already written through the years. And 50% are my words. Stringing the whole thing together, and I did that through researching deeply into his history, everything that was, all the interviews he'd done, and I also was able to interview pilots that flew with him that are my friends today. And so I was very lucky to be able to pull this together for him, and it, talk about a labor of love. Wow.
Well, the result, the result is really fantastic, and of course it's called Fighter Pilot, the memoirs of legendary ace Robin Olds. But I've always thought that it just needed one word as a title, hero. He epitomizes what we imagine a hero to be in so many ways. the most important being his love for the men that he served with.
Yes, that's so true. That's exactly who he was. And he never would have called himself a hero. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you how emotional it is for me. I do a lot of air shows and speaking at museums and Air Force bases around the world. And I just never get tired of when the guys come up to me who flew with him and get teary-eyed and tell me how much they revered him and they would have followed him into hell and back. But even more than that, what's just astonishing to me now is his photo is up in all the squadron operations rooms around the world. These young fighter pilots that are in combat right now, the F-22 guys, the F-16, F-15E Strike Eagle guys, they all revere Robin Olds. It's like he's their spirit animal now. And that, to me, is what's keeping my dad's legacy going. It's as if he's flying right along with them, and that is just the coolest feeling. You can't even imagine how that touches me every time I hear it.
Well, I know, of course, you're so proud. And as I said, I tear up when I talk of your father because, as you know, I've been involved with the F-105 Warriors Project, trying to preserve the memories of the fantastic F-105 Warriors. And so I quite often talk to military guys. And again, exactly what you said, that they get tears in their eyes. And, you know, they're 70 years old, 80 years old. But when they talk about Robin Olds, they are just so, always so moved, and you're right. And many of them actually did follow him to hell and back. Yeah. And because of him, many of them did make it back. And it's just, let's, you know, for people, younger people who have really no understanding of what wars were like. And now we have all these drone pilots, you know, people don't understand what exactly your father did. And he spanned from World War II through the Korean War and then showed up in Vietnam when many people thought he was beyond the age to take part. And he certainly took part in a big way.
Oh, yes, he did. And when he showed up in Vietnam as a 45-year-old full bird colonel, you know, grizzled old guy in comparison to all these, you know, 25 to 30-year-olds, you can imagine how they kind of looked askance at any idea that this old guy would lead them into battle. And so they were very used to having a wing commander who, you know, might fly two or three missions and then would sit behind his desk and lead from there. But he stood up in front of them when he first got there, as my father did. Well, first thing I will tell you that the very first thing he always did when he would go to a new base is he would throw his bags down in his room and he would go around the entire base into all the, like, the commissary and the barber shop and the hospital. And he would take a six pack of beer out to the guys working on the flight line at 3 a.m. and he would introduce himself and sit and talk to people and ask them what they needed and tell them that he had their back, that they could count on him to support them in any way they needed. I mean, can you imagine having a leader like that today, that personal contact? And so when that happened with the demoralized group at Ubon Air Force Base in Thailand that had been suffering so terribly from the losses of the 105 and the camaraderie among all the bases had just gone to hell, and Robin Olds shows up and puts himself in their place and becomes their leader, literally within 2 weeks flying and leading them up into North Vietnam for all these missions. And he flew 152 combat missions as a full bird 46-year-old colonel. It must have been an amazing experience for all these youngsters.
Those are
the 70 and 80-year-olds now that are, you know,
exactly. I've spoken to many of the guys on the flight line, and they were young. I mean, some of them were just out of high school, 19 years old, and their memory of seeing your father is still so vivid in their minds. And they do. They get tears in their eyes when they remember how he came to the flight line, because a lot of, you know, let's say the generals didn't show up there very often. And so it was so thrilling that he would come there and talk to them one-on-one. And it was amazing.
Yes, and you know, I had I briefly said North Korea when I was just speaking, and North Korea is very much on my mind and a lot of people's minds these days. So I went to South Korea last year, invited by the 8th Fighter Wing, which is now at Kunsan. It moved from Ubon in the mid-1970s up to South Korea. And these kids are at the forefront of, you know, protecting South Korea from the crazy man up north. And they invited me over because they were renaming their main avenue to Robin Olds Avenue. And I knew that the 8th Wing was there, but I didn't really, and I knew my dad had gone over to visit them several times, but I really didn't know the full extent of what that meant. And when I got there and found out that that entire base, that wing, is all about Robin Olds, it is called the Wolf Pack, as he named his guys in Vietnam before they took off on Bolo. Everything is Wolf Pack. All the F-16s have WP on the tails and the symbol of the wolf. Everything on that base is still, I think, his wing, and under his kind of spirit leadership, it was just astonishing. So, you know, his legacy as a wonderful leader is really greater, far greater than his legacy as an absolutely astonishingly good fighter pilot, which is something I think is absolutely great. He had it all. He was the real deal. Oh, and he was a great dad. Oh my gosh, he was just the greatest dad. I'm so lucky.
Well, absolutely. And he was so beautiful. He was a movie star. And
Oh yeah.
I mean, he could have just as easily, if he had decided to retire after World War II and gone to Hollywood, which he has, as a matter of fact, there's a reason he did. He could have become, you know, a movie star. I'm sure of it. You know, he's just so beautiful to look at.
Yes, and yeah, I think, you know, you're probably going to say that my mother was the movie star that he met and married in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that I love knowing is that she was dating Clark Gable when she met Robin. And she dumped Gable within a week and married Robin 9 months later. That kind of says it all.
Yeah, well.
And then people often ask me, now, who would play your dad in the movies? Well, I cannot think of somebody.
There's nobody.
He was 6'2", broad-shouldered, deep voice. Very graceful in his movements because he was an amazing athlete and just so charismatic and handsome that nobody comes to mind that could accurately play him.
I can imagine Hollywood trying to make a movie and putting in some of these stars that look like, I'm sorry to say, but wimps. I mean,
I know.
Oh my goodness, there's nobody. You're right. There absolutely is no one who could match your father. They have to go a long way to find anyone who could even, you know, slightly play him. So, you know, let's go back a little bit, all the way back to World War II. Tell us, you know, right there. I mean, that's an amazing, you know, his life really, if we could find an actor worthy of him, you could do, you know, three separate movies, the World War II one, the Korean one, well, maybe four, the Vietnam one, and then, of course, the one that was, how can we say, commandant of the Air Force Academy, and some of the things that he got up there, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was an amazing time. And, you know, people who read the book have no idea that I had to leave out so many stories about him, and people who would sent me tons of stories, great, funny things, wonderful things that happened at the Air Force Academy and all throughout his career. And I'd actually turned in a book that was 600 pages long, and the publisher said, no, we have to edit it. And that's where Ed Rasmus came in. He was a pilot I tapped, who had been trying to tell Robin to, you know, help him write the book. And I called Ed when I got well into the writing, and I said, I need help editing. And he came on board and did a masterful job, especially when we had to cut it from 600 to 425. And, you know, right now what I'm thinking about doing is gathering a lot of the material that was cut out and then adding a ton more, because I have photographs that people have never seen. And I would love to publish his diaries. And people have no idea that Robin was an amazing artist. He was a brilliant cartoonist. satirical cartoonist, and I have over 500 of his original drawings, and every time I show them to pilots, they just go crazy, because it's social commentary of the time. It's really wonderful stuff. So,
well, you have to come out with another book.
Yeah, and the World War II material is just rich and deep with the cartoons he was drawing. So I'm seriously thinking about that now. I'm trying to get organized, but I'm also under contract to write my grandfather's biography, and have been doing a lot of research over the last several months, and heading off later this week to go to Maxwell Air Force Base and dive into the archives there, into the original documents. So there's a lot to do. There's a lot still to do. And there's a lot more story to tell about him. And I'm just so thrilled that people are interested in and learning and keeping his legacy going.
Well, one of the things I love is that the story of how I think he is the only pilot in history to have shot down an enemy aircraft while he was gliding. He didn't even need a motor.
Whenever he tells that story, it's always tongue-in-cheek. You know, he always giggles. He had the greatest giggle and lifts his shoulders and laughs and raises his eyebrows. And he said, yeah, I think I was probably the only pilot to shoot somebody down in glide mode. Well, that happened when his engines quit on him in the P-38 in World War II. And he was going down. And he had a guy behind him and an enemy in front of him. And he was going down, so he just decided he already had the guy in front in his sights. So he pulled the trigger. You know, and the guy went down, and Robin went down too, but luckily recovered the engines in time and pulled out. He told me it was about 100 feet above the ground. It was very close.
Well, of course, in World War II, you mentioned your grandfather because your grandfather was also in the Air Force, and Robin followed in his footsteps.
Yes, and in many ways, it was Major General Robert Olds, was my grandfather, is more important to the history of the Air Force than my dad. My dad's legacy as a commander and a fighter pilot is huge, absolutely huge. But my grandfather was part of the whole group forming the start of the Air Force. He was Billy Mitchell's aide all the way through the court martials. He was Curtis LeMay's commander. He was Claire Chennault's commander. He was tasked by Roosevelt to establish the ferrying command, which was the system to get our planes we were building in the States over to Europe and over into the Pacific. And Robert is actually the first person who had the idea of using women pilots. Many people don't know that. And he wrote up a whole system in tons of interviews, and I've seen part of them at Maxwell already, when he would sit down with these amazing women pilots and compile all the statistics to prove to the government that they could take the planes across. And so he did this whole report and submitted it to Hap Arnold, and Hap Arnold didn't like that idea at all, so it got shelved until Jackie Cochran talked to Eleanor Roosevelt and said, you know, us women pilots can really take these over there, and that's when it started happening. And then they went back to using Robert's plan. And so the ferrying command turned into, of course, the Berlin Airlift, and it turned into our military airlift command. And it's, you know, what we know today when you see the C-17 and the enormous C-5 bringing all the troops back and forth and the supplies everywhere. That started on a yellow piece of legal pad with my grandfather.
Wow.
And so I'm really excited to get his story out. It won't be as big a book as my dad's memoirs, but it's an important book, and it needs to be slotted in its place in history among all the other great men that were starting the Air Force at that time. So it's exciting, but it's very intimidating too to pull all that research together.
Well, I think it's going to be a fantastic book because, as you said, he plays such an important part in Air Force history. Now, I have to take a quick break. But hold on, because as soon as we come back, I want to talk a little bit more. I want to talk about your father's mustache, which everybody comments on. Okay? We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Back with Christina Oles, who, along with her father, wrote a fantastic memoir called Fighter Pilot, The Memoirs of Legendary Ace Robin Oles. And Christina was just telling us that she's working on a new book about her grandfather, who was also an Air Force pilot and very important in the whole history of the Air Force. Christina, it's so nice to be talking to you today.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight.
Well, you know, I want to talk about your father's mustache, but I want to talk about when you went to Europe and you got to fly. Did you get to fly in a P-38?
No, not a P-38.
What did you fly?
P-51. It was a P-51, one of my dad's Mustangs that he flew in World War II.
Wow.
Named Scat 7, is now owned by a Belgian industrialist and just in pristine, beautiful condition. And many, many years ago, it got turned into a two-seater, a TF, P-51, a trainer. And they actually take people up and teach them how to fly Mustangs in it. But they invited me over, and I went with my daughter, who's my father's only grandchild. And Jenny and I went over to Belgium and had the most amazing time. Oh, my gosh, the media circus was crazy because it's the only flying Mustang in Belgium. And so they took us up, of course, one at a time, and for glorious flights and landing at big airports to great media events. But I can tell you, the emotion of being in my dad's aircraft, I was wearing his flight jacket and his West Point ring and his dog tags, and the emotion of being in his aircraft looking down at the same land that he flew over so many times in World War II in that Mustang. It was just an almost out-of-body, otherworldly experience for me. It was a very profoundly wonderful experience to have. And from the air, Belgium still looks the same as does France, you know, until you get to the cities and see a lot more development. But out in the countryside, it just looks exactly the same from the air.
Wow.
I can't imagine how poor Europe was so devastated during that time.
It was, and I have a feeling your dad was flying on your shoulder.
I think that happens a lot, yes.
Yeah, I think so. And I have to mention that Jenny is absolutely beautiful.
She is beautiful. She's stunning. My movie star mother went right through me to her. I look a lot like my dad, and I'm a big, tall girl, and Jenny is beautiful and petite and is looks a lot like my mother, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful girl, and I'm so glad that she is all about her grandpa's legacy. She wears a silver P-51 necklace all the time, and she's a costume designer in Hollywood. So, you know, it's really fun to share all of this with her.
Well, she's so beautiful, and of course, as the granddaughter of Ella Raines, it's just amazing to look at her. So, you know, when you look at the pictures of your father back in those days in after World War II, and again, as you said, he was so handsome. Tell us about the mustache. When did the mustache come about?
Well, the first thing that happened was his influence. His first assignment after World War II was to go back, well, after he flew the P-80 in the States, was to go back over to England, and he was the only American who was invited to be the squadron commander of RAF Squadron Number 1, which is a huge deal. And in fact, the RAF, the Royal Air Force, is still so enamored with Robin that their base in Scotland has just opened the Robin Olds Bar, which many people tell me they have visited and is great. I'm hoping to visit someday. But part of the RAF Squadron 1 group back in 1948 for him was a guy named Tommy Burns, who had a beautiful handlebar mustache, as the British grow. And that stayed with him through life. And right after Bolo, right after the huge event in Vietnam, January 2nd of 1967, Operation Bolo, and when Robin changed the tactics of the air war as a result of that operation, and he, about halfway through January, he decided that he wanted to start growing a mustache, first of all in honor of Tommy Burns. But the moment it started going out of limits, you know, which is beyond the corners of his mouth and over the top of his lip, the generals in Washington started saying, shave it off, take that off, keep it in limits. No. And Robin decided deliberately that mustache was going to become what is now known as Robin Olds' single-digit salute to Washington, D.C. It was his commentary on McNamara designing the tactics from a desk, and that the orders were coming from D.C. from people who had absolutely no clue how to fight that air war. So he grew that mustache, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew out of bounds, to the point where it's so legendary now that every March around the world, starting on March 1st, fighter pilots will start growing their mustaches, and they'll have a competition to see who gets the best one by the end of March. And I've had the privilege, I guess it's a privilege, it's pretty funny, to go around several bases and judge the competition at the end of March. And it's just really funny because none of the guys now will grow them out of limits. You just can't. You get in too much trouble these days. So I have to give funny awards like probably going to be the most improved. You know, I take a magnifying glass and a ruler, and we have a lot of fun with the judging. But it's a wonderful morale booster. And that mustache is now so famous that it has its own Wikipedia page. Isn't that ridiculous?
And
Mustache March has its own Wikipedia page. And to this day, the cadets at the Air Force Academy will put on fake mustaches whenever I go visit. And even the girls do. It's just a wonderful thing that he thought of doing, and it's turned into sort of a symbol.
And a tribute to a real hero, because
right.
There weren't, well, as you said, he had so many problems with the way the war was fought in Vietnam. And of course, having dealt, as I have, with F-105 pilots who flew in day after day after day on the same route at the same time, and were slaughtered or were, you know, shot down and captured and spent, you know, years, sometimes 8 years in prisoner of war camp. You know, it's just unbelievable that no one listened.
It is. It is astonishing. And it upset him so deeply that he did everything he could to overturn that. And he was finally successful in it. With Operation Bolo, it started changing the tide. And then there were several operations after that that were ordered that were quickly proven to be ridiculous. Rapid Roger is one, a system that was developed in Washington, D.C. that totally taxed all the aircraft and the maintenance crews. And it finally went away while Robin was over there. He really fought as hard as he could for the sake of his men and for the sake of getting everybody out of the war. And, you know, that famous meeting with LBJ in the Oval Office the day after he got back from Vietnam just made headlines all around.
Well, tell us about that. Tell everyone about that.
So Robin was, of course, the most famous face coming back from the Vietnam War, and he was hauled into President Johnson's office right away. And Johnson said to him, you know, oh, so Colonel, tell me how you think things are going over there. And my dad said, sir, with all due respect to you as my commander-in-chief, get us the hell out of this goddamn war. And Johnson looked askance and said, well, son, how do you expect me to do that? And Robin said, it's simple. Just win it. We can win it right now. But, of course, they couldn't. We couldn't mine the harbors. They couldn't bomb the supply lines. They couldn't attack the air bases. Hanoi was off limits. So many things were off limits because it was such a political war that there was no way to undercut the enemy's effectiveness with the tactics the way they were. And so he came back. He had that meeting in 1967, and the war dragged on for another six years. And the loss of life was just phenomenal for both 58,000 plus Americans and 2 million Vietnamese. I mean, really, that's just ridiculous. He was so upset with that whole war, and he spent so many years afterwards traveling and speaking about how bad it was, how unfortunate, how ridiculous it was. It stayed with him throughout his life. It really upset him.
Well, I think all of that comes through very clearly in your book, his opinion of the war and the problems and why it wasn't fought properly. And I think it's so relevant for today because I'm afraid we're facing the same kind of situation where, you know, the idea is to win it and get out. But to really win it, not to just, you know, win it and or pretend you win it. So just for that alone, I think everyone should read Fighter Pilot, the memoirs of legendary ace Rob Olds, because it is these ideas have not changed. Unfortunately, war is with us, and it helps, I think, when we read about heroes like your dad and men who really cared about the people they were working with, the people they were trying to save, not just our side, but also, as you said, that so many people died unnecessarily, just like in this war, so many people are dying unnecessarily because we just don't get it over with.
Right. It's not easy. There's no doubt about it, but it's also, there's no doubt that it's very political. And you know, how can we, since the military are doing their jobs as ordered by the politicians, as ordered by Washington, you know, the military's, the hands are tied. And the frustration that I sense when I go around to these bases is just phenomenal with the people who just really, really want to do a good job, but they're stopped from doing an effective job that would bring things to a close. You know, but I don't deny that it's a really difficult choices and decisions to make because it impacts so many people in every country that, you know, we're involved in right now and, you know, potentially going forward. So,
but even in World War II, your father was told not to attack certain facilities, and that would have saved thousands, tens of thousands of American lives.
Oh well, and he told me he had nightmares for years after D-Day because his mission on D-Day, he flew three missions from Wadisham in his P-38, and their mission was just to patrol the beaches in case the Luftwaffe came up and started attacking the ships. But that day, the Luftwaffe never came up. And so my dad told me then in his three missions throughout those 24 hours, as he was patrolling the beaches parallel and then going out into the ocean and coming back and always watching for the Luftwaffe, that they could see the whites of the Germans' eyes on the cliffs firing down at the kids landing in the beaches. And their orders were not to fire on the cliffs, on the gun emplacements on the cliffs. And my dad said it just was the very first time that he really thought he should not obey orders because he believes that they could have saved thousands and thousands of Allied lives that were landing in the waters that day if they'd been allowed to divert once they knew the Luftwaffe wasn't coming up and take out the gun emplacement. So that stayed with him throughout his life as well. He talked about it, in fact, a week before he passed away, just shaking his head and looking very sad about it.
Because, you know, my father was in D-Day, Eldrick Hendrickson. He won a Silver Star. And those memories of what happened to his friends and all of the people in his company on D-Day were still so vivid in his mind that he, you know, he, like so many World War II guys, they didn't talk about it. They didn't want to talk about it. But every once in a while, the end of his life too, I wanted to know more. I wanted him to, you know, be able to share some of it. And the little that he would was just this whole tragedy that they knew all, they saw all of these people on the top of the cliff shooting at them, and nobody came to help. They had to claw their way inch by inch through the sand. It was just incredible.
My dad really started talking about it after the movie Saving Private Ryan came out, because he told me that he wept in that opening sequence in Saving Private Ryan, because he said that's exactly how it was. It's exactly how the landing on the beaches of Normandy went. And it brought back, that actually really started him talking about World War II and D-Day. I was seeing that movie. So I have to hand it to Tom Hanks for pulling that together, because it's important. It was an important piece of film for everybody to see and kind of try to understand what the guys went through. And no wonder they couldn't talk about it when they got home. I mean, who at home could really understand what they went through? There's just no way. And talking about it and trying to make it understandable would just bring them more pain and, you know, sadness. So I fully understand why they didn't talk about it.
And I think the knowledge of knowing that the planes were up there and just didn't come to help them must have been very hard on them too.
Oh, terrible. I can't imagine.
So I think that, of course, this book has been a journey of love for you, because not only did you write the book, but now, as you say, you go around all over the world, and everyone is, all of the pilots are all so excited to meet you and to talk, you know, to talk to you, because they know that your father was unlike any other pilot. He's in a league completely of his own.
Completely a league of his own. And when I wrote the book for him, it was because I had seen so many pilots come up to him while I traveled with him in his later years and beg him to write his memoirs. And guys would turn to me and say, please make him write his memoirs. We need his story. So when I started pulling the book together, I thought, I'm going to give my dad a gift of getting his story out there and to the pilots that want it. And when I was writing, I thought, this will just be a small book. I will just make photocopies of it and spiral bind it and send it out to any pilots who want it, which was pretty funny because it turned out to be quite a big, wonderful book. But afterwards, you know, thinking that I had given my dad the gift of his legacy cemented, I realized that really wasn't happening at all. He gave me the gift, and I get very emotional about this. He gave me the gift of a brand new life, of being part of the aviation world and the aviation community and the family of pilots and people who love pilots and people who love airplanes and history. And that is my world now. That's my whole world. I never would have imagined this 10 years ago. And it gives me so much joy, I can't even describe what it's like to sit in an air show when a heritage flight of an F-22, a P-51, and a P-38, and maybe an A-10 are flying together overhead, and they're playing that wonderful song, Keep 'Em Flying. Oh, my gosh, I cry every time. I cannot believe the gift that has come to my life, and it just keeps on going. I'm taking off later this week for more travels and speeches and meeting more great people and having more great adventures. And this is my family now. My dad gave me my family.
And I know all of them. Amazing. All of them love you. And as I said, whenever I talk to F-105 pilot or one of the ground crew, they will always mention, you know, if they had the chance to see you, to meet you, they're always so thrilled, and they get tears in their eyes just because they got to shake your hand. because because you've kept Robin alive, and as I said, I can't see anybody. I wish there was somebody great enough to play him, and that we could, you know, just fill the big screen with a real true story about him and everything. I was thinking about some of the people when you wrote the book. Some of the people might not have been that happy. There are some career people in Washington who didn't come off looking so good in some of this, but you know, he bucked the system. And he stood up for himself and for the guys, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, he always told the truth as he saw it. He didn't hold back from that, but he did it in a very elegant way, and that's what earned him so much respect. And even the guys in Washington who were, you know, had desk jobs and were never any intention or desire or ability to be fighter pilots, and so there was a lot of resentment, but Even they have told me that they came to really, really respect what he was doing and the way he handled himself and everything with tremendous dignity always.
That's and charm.
Who my dad was.
And charm.
So charming and charismatic. Oh, my gosh. He'd walk into a room and it was like a light would come into the room and he'd instantly get surrounded. Just a great guy and so funny. Oh, my gosh. He's just, oh, he could tell 400 jokes and remember all the punchlines. I can't remember one. You know, he just was loved life to the fullest, loved life, loved people, loved the guys who flew with him and the ground crews, and just kept encouraging people to take care of each other and to, you know, enjoy each moment and remember what life is all about, which is really loving each other and taking care of each other as best you can. He was very much like that in his personal life. Just a phenomenal human being, a one of a kind, without a doubt.
Absolutely. Someone who could fly and take such an enormous chance with his life and come out the victor in so many ways, not just from the battle, but from the mindset.
Yes, he was, you know, but he's one of those people that were, people have asked me to write a leadership book about his leadership style, and the problem with that, I started on it a few years ago, but the problem is Robin was one of those innate leaders, those people that from childhood on are become a leader without even asking to be. He was elected president of his class in high school 3 years in a row without ever running and captain of the football team. And it was just he just had a natural way about him, you know, a lot of which he learned from his father, who was also a great leader. But I think if people read the book or they read about Robin online, they can see a lot of hints on how to be good with people and how to. It's personal contact is what it's all about. I mean, you really sincerely have to care about the person that's in front of you or the people you're responsible for, whether you're leading a squadron or leading a corporation or leading a country. You have to show that you care. That's the only way a leader will be respected.
And that's everything in your father and in your grandfather. And so I'm going to be looking forward to that book, the story about Robert Olds, General Robert Olds. And unfortunately, he died early in the war. I think 1943 or something.
Yes, he was quite young.
Yes.
He was 46 years old and a major general when he suddenly got heart disease, or actually been brewing for a while. But the stress that all those guys were under was phenomenal during that time. The number of jobs he had, he had just been appointed by Hap Arnold to be the chief of the 2nd Air Force, which was basically in charge of everything happening in the Pacific. And I think the stress got to him, and so he came down with this horrible fatal heart condition, and my dad and his brother Stephen got to him just in time before he died, and it was a month before Robin's graduation from West Point, so he dedicated his commission to his grandfather at the graduation. You know, there's lots that I'm discovering in research of, you know, it's hard to say. I think my grandfather would have become a four-star general. There's no doubt about it when you look at all the other men who were serving with him at the same time who rose quite high through the ranks to, you know, have significant jobs. So it was a great loss. My dad had lost his own mother when he was only 4 years old. So he dealt with loss a lot in his life. I think it made him a very much stronger person.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Christina, for joining me today and for talking about your father and your grandfather. And I hope that as soon as the book comes out, the new book about your grandfather, you'll come back on the program to tell us more about him and to share some more stories about all of the wonderful events that I know you attend around the world, because everyone who has ever flown an aircraft loves your father.
Oh, thank you so much, Patsy. It's been a delight. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Okay, well, you take care now and have a good trip, and we'll stay in contact. And I don't know, do you ever get over here to MacDill?
I might. I'm actually going to be in Florida next week, but my time is pretty tight. But let's talk about that. Let's send some emails back and forth.
Okay.
Because I find myself on the East Coast quite a bit these days.
Okay. Well, if you get over to the West Coast, at MacDill near Tampa, of course, that's where all the drone planes are flying from now. But there are still a lot of pilots here. And many retired pilots here have retired here to this area in Florida who would just love to see you.
Oh, I would love that. I will definitely set that up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Patsy. Bye.
Oh, wow. You know, I just, as I said, first of all, I would like to recommend everyone buy this book. It's called Fighter Pilot, The Memoirs of Legendary Ace Robin Olds. And then after you've read it, because it's a biography of a fantastic hero. But when you finish, instead of just keeping the book on your shelf, donate it to one of the VA hospitals or VA organizations, because all of the guys will love this book, and it's something that they will be very touched if you will share it. It's just a kind and wonderful thing that you can do. And it's written by Christina Olds, and it's called Fighter Pilot, The Memoirs of Legendary Ace Robin Olds. I want to thank everyone who has supported my F-105 project over the years. I'm still working on it. We have been in discussion, and I'm going to soon have the producer of our F-105. It's called the Forgotten F-105 Project, and you can see it on the internet. It's www.forgottenf105warriors.com, and you can read more about my project, because I am trying to preserve the memories of these heroes, and I'm getting so frustrated because some of the television stations are just driving me crazy, because they don't seem to get the concept that these guys are unfortunately passing away at astounding rates. They're getting older and older, and I would like to get them on film before it's too late. So I'm working hard, and my partner and I, Jonathan Chambers, we're working hard in trying to convince the networks to support our project so we can get these interviews on tape. Many of them we have, of course, on the audio, but we don't have the video. And so we're hoping that we can get some support from some of the networks. But meanwhile, go to www.forgottenf105warriors.com and read about my project. And I want to just, on the way out today, I want to play a song that says everything about the F-105 guys, who I love and admire, great heroes, all. And here is the song that I just love. And we're good.
I love my plane. It is my body. I am its brain. My Thunder Chief loves me. and I love her too. But I get the creeps with only one seat and one engine too. She's faster than lightning, it says on her dials. To get a thud airborne takes only 2 miles. She's packed with transistors, black boxes, diodes. But stay alert, cause you might get hurt when she explodes. She totes more bombs than a B-17. My F-105 has a gun and she's mean. But there is one thing that curdles my blood. It's lonesome up there, alone in the air in my single seat thud. I love my thud, and she loves me too. But she soaks up flak like a magnet can do. If I get my 100 and I'm still alive, I'll have no grief. Goodbye, Thunder Chief, my F-105.
Okay. Well, I just want to tell everyone that if you have extra books, military books, around, one of the places that you can bring them to here in our area is Bay Pines, a VA hospital. And there are locations all around the city and in your city, VA organizations. And just contact them and see what you can do to volunteer, because it's a wonderful thing to take some time to meet with our vets and to see what you can do to help. And meanwhile, of course, another organization you can support is the USO, because we still have so many guys out there who are in service, and they just really appreciate the work that the USO does for them. So think about what you can do to help our veterans. It's not an easy task what they have in going on with them, between all of the injuries that they're suffering and the terrible problems that they're facing with the Veterans Administration problems. It is a time for you to support them. And this is Patsy with a Z, and I just want to say thank you for joining me today. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone share. Meanwhile, remember, find your joy and share it. Don't let anyone steal it. Bye-bye.